It's good to see you. And I wanted to say, so people could hear me say it, so that people know, but I'm really proud of you, actually, for everything you're doing. Because, you know, over the past few months, I've had to talk a lot about the protests and everything, and I mention you a lot, because I remember me and you were covering them, and we showed up about the same time on the scene and kind of followed them. And it's been interesting to watch what you've built, and whereas, you know, people have been really on me about, you know, integrity and observing things and stuff like that, to me, I've always said that you were more the eyes and ears of Kenosha, because you were always running around live, you know?
Thanks.
But I just wanted to say that, because I haven't seen you in the longest time.
Yeah, no, it's been kind of crazy, man, but hey, that means a lot, honestly, especially, you know, coming from someone that's was on the ground and there to see everything unfold, you know?
Yeah.
Like, so a lot of people say it, you know, stuff like that, not necessarily exactly that, but similar things, and I'm just like, it's a lot of pressure, you know? And it's like, being on the ground, there's a lot of times, you know, where it was like, we were kind of just kind of chilling sometimes, and then there was like, there were the moments where it's like really, really heated, like we don't know exactly what's going on, but there was a lot of time where it was like
there was a lot of like downtime-ish, you know, and talking, and then like, I always loved the moments where like things would start to get a little bit tense, and then you would see people looking around, like at the same people, like making eye contact, like me, you, me or Jordan Polly, and then like Ron would be over somewhere looking at something, like, oh.
Yeah, man, it definitely was an interesting year, to say the least.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, before even all of this happened, like, you were involved in journalism, you worked for the Kenosha News for a stint there, no longer. We'll get into that a little bit later. Yeah. But, like, let's go back to, like, young Dan, like, growing up, like, did you dream to be a journalist? Like, was this something that you always wanted to do? Did you want to be, like, you know, a superhero, a firefighter, and then became a journalist? What's your story?
So, I guess my first exposure to journalism, well, I had two first exposures now that I think about it. One was kind of cutesy, like, so I was super into Superman as a kid. Well, Superman and Batman. And, like, I used to watch those old, like, cartoons of Superman, like Superman vs. the Robot Man or something like that. Like, so I had, like, an old, like, George Reeves or whatever, like, Superman, like, pajamas that I would wear and stuff like that. So because of Clark Kent being a journalist, that was my exposure to newspapers at first. But also, thinking about it now, my father used to write a column for the Racine Journal Times when I was a kid. So sometimes I'd go with him to drop off his column. So it was more of a tangential, like, kind of the way of a friend connection with journalism, younger in life. It wasn't until in high school I kind of wrote some things, but it was mostly columns, music reviews, a music column where I did predict the death of Amy Winehouse.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Where at the time I didn't like her, but now I'm really sad that I said what I said, because she was so talented.
Was it like a 27 Club thing that happened to come true?
I'm trying to remember who died. It might have been Heath Ledger. It might have been right after Heath Ledger's death or something like that. And I called, like, the next one's probably going to be Amy Winehouse.
Oh, wow.
And then it happened. I was like, damn. Like, yeah.
And that was the last time you predicted
that. That was the last time I said it. I was just like, nope, no more predictions. But, no, I did stuff like that. And it wasn't until college that, so I was an English major, but I had a journalism minor when I was at Whitewater. When I went to Madison for my last 2 years, I was just an English major, but in my junior year while living in Madison, my father was the superintendent in Beloit, and he had gotten to know the editor-in-chief of Beloit Daily News, Bill Barth, and through that connection, I was able to, because I didn't really do internships, but I was able to do a type of internship at Beloit Daily News, so I would I shadowed some reporters. I wrote a few features, and that was kind of the moment that I started to get more into journalism. You know, seeing my byline there, seeing the stories in print, just being able to see the way that I told stories, kind of as a product or as a final product, and I really liked it. So after I graduated from college, I applied to newspapers, and I was denied by like every newspaper except for the Western Nebraska Observer in Kimmel, Nebraska, which was a weekly. And Kimmel, Nebraska is a city of 2,500, and it's way west. It's the last city in Nebraska before you enter Wyoming, to the west, and Colorado to the south. So I was like 10 miles away from the Colorado state line and about the same from Wyoming state line. So it's no man's land. 40 miles between the nearest, let's say, city of about 2,000 people at least. So it was that place, Kimball, was where I kind of made a lot of my mistakes and kind of developed my journalist approaches to things, and definitely learned how to be realistic about the profession. Like, I entered a year into being a journalist, I was the editor and publisher of that paper because two editors had left, and you don't really get a lot of people out in Western Nebraska, so they kind of just asked the outgoing letter editor, like, hey, could the reporter do it? And they said yes, and I got the job. So I was doing that, and a lot of my approach now is a reaction to how I approached things when I was younger. I was way more stubborn, way more headstrong about, you know, if I thought something should be presented a certain way or be covered a certain way, I wouldn't listen to anybody else. So that caused a lot of heartache for me and a lot of hard lessons that I went through that kind of softened my approach or opened my eyes to, I don't know everything. In fact, I don't know most things. So that's kind of what happened. And then I moved to Indiana and took a position there in Monticello, which is about 3 hours south of here, or 3 hours away from here. Because I was trying to get back home at that point. I had been gone 3 years from around here. And I missed my parents and my family and things like that. So Indiana was close enough. I could still, if I wanted to go for a weekend, it's a 3 hour drive, you know? But it still wasn't being back. So I ended up being at that paper for about 2 years, and then I was actually fired over, and it's funny that this is a thing now, because now when I think of what happened at this newspaper and then the Kenosha News, thank God I am self-employed, because people would have questions if they tried to hire me. But I was fired from that position because what happened was, over time at this newspaper, so it was 6 days a week, and I was working 10 to 12 hours a day. Yeah, and I only had a staff of, so it was me on the news side, me, my sports editor, and a reporter, so I had three people. And it was a city of about 6,000, but it was an entire county, too. And it was probably the most draining job I've ever had. And by the end of it, I was kind of, the company was shifting. They were doing things that I didn't appreciate. They fired my sports editor behind my back and hired a new one. They brought in a kind of regional editor who turned out to be like a secret replacement for me, which I kind of saw coming. Much more somebody who didn't ask so many questions about company decisions, particularly dress code. They had unveiled a dress code that was very specific as to not only the type of pants or skirt women in the company could wear, what colors they could be.
What?
Yeah, and me and my reporter, who was a woman, because I tried my best to hire, you know, diverse people, but nobody wants to live in Monticello, Indiana, if they're not from there, really. So we were both saying how sexist what it was, and this regional editor was kind of just like, huh, what? How is this sexist? And I'm like, are you serious? So me and him didn't get along. We butted heads a lot, and eventually they fired me, and it was like I sat down at the table. Because it was like performance review. It was like the guise of it, but I knew. In fact, I almost said when I sat down, like, so when's my last day? Because, like, I knew. And they're like, well, we're not going to waste time. We're going to let you go. And I was like, oh, all right. Well, I was probably going to quit anyway, so this is cool. And, like, it was just, like, a thing of, like, mutual, like, yeah, don't want to be here anymore. You guys don't want me here. Like, mm-hmm. Cool. Came back to Kenosha, and that's kind of when I hit the Kenosha news and started getting more involved here again. It was more of a desk job at first. I was more behind the scenes, but as we cut staff, I had to go out in the field more, and that's kind of what led to me even being at these protests, mm-hmm. is that we just didn't have the staff that we used to, so I would jump in. Plus, it was after, the way that I describe it is, by the beginning of this year, I think, how I started the year was, I was going to leave journalism. I didn't want to do it anymore. I wanted nothing to do with newspapers. I was going to actually probably just pursue music and just wash my hands of it all. Because I had gotten so tired of dealing with the industry and management and corporations and things like that. And I love telling stories. I hate doing it in a corporate vacuum. It's very limiting, and they get final say on how the story looks and how it's presented and what it says. So a lot of the things, little pieces of humanity you like to put in stories or you try to, they'll eliminate them. Mm. So it gets really, really frustrating. And then, you know, things this summer happened, so I was already drained and tired and angry and kind of bitter, because even for all the work I did in my off hours and extra work and everything, I had asked for a bonus. Not even a specific amount, just literally said to my boss, is it possible for the company to just give me some kind of symbolic bonus just to acknowledge the extra stuff I've done?
Right. And, I mean, you were putting in a lot of work this summer, too. I mean, and even, like, just to kind of, before we get into, like, the whole thing that happened, that was on your day off.
Exactly.
Right? So it's like, you're going on your day off covering events. They're able to write articles that are giving them, like, tons of traffic, probably traffic that they hadn't really seen.
It was insane.
And then it's, like, just a bonus, no price tag on it. You know, you could even, you could have threw me, like, $100 or something and said,
they could have, literally, the publisher could have walked to my desk and just put down $20. Mm. I would have been fine. Mm. Just something. But it never happened.
Recognition. In fact,
yeah, he told me, like, you know, we'll look at the budget, and we'll try, I'll talk to them, you know. And then that was a year. That was when we were in the old building. And then a year later, at the time of the protest, I did the same thing, same response.
Mm-hmm. Corporations, man.
Exactly. Corporations. Exactly. And it's like, it's funny because I used to be a person where it's like, people trip out about corporations, but they're okay. And then after working in kind of the corporate system for 8 years, like, God, it really trains your soul.
And then you kind of, you see how they, you're always expendable. They're always trying to line something up behind your back. There's always, oh yeah, we just need to talk to you about your performance, come in. And it's just like, come on.
So many people get tricked into walking into their firing.
Yeah.
It's like, I've seen people, the weirdest thing I ever saw, like, just, if you ever want to see the coldest thing ever, was, okay, so an editor got fired from Kenosha News, and what happened was the executive editor, who was about to fire this person, walked past him and said, hey, I want to show you something downstairs. I just want your opinion on it. Could you just come? So he walks out. After they turn the corner where they couldn't see in the newsroom anymore, the assistant walks in the other door with a box, throws it underneath the desk, and just walks out. And I was just like, what?
Oh, wow. That's a cold game.
Another person got fired on their birthday. Like, they brought in, like, treats for people on their own birthday, and then they got fired that day. Like, it was like...
Yeah, I had a horrible experience with a corporation being let go. And circumstantially, around the time when it happened, and then, like, them knowing... And then how they treat you, and they're, like, laughing, and they're like, oh, what are you going to do with all, like, holiday time? Let's say maybe my son was about to be born in, like, a week and a half, and, like, you've been talking to me about it this entire time. And then, you know, a situation comes in, and it's like, why is there a corporate person here? What? This area manager never comes here for any reason. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it is what it is. That's why... At the start of the year, just like you, I was like, I'm not gonna work in any kind of corporate setting at all. Like, the goal is to not deal with it, you know? Like, and circumstantially, things happen, like, where I, like, literally, I was like, my main focus is conventions. Like, typically what I do, I go to Comic Cons, I host panels, you know, I write articles for a website, playlegit.net, that I work for. Nice. And it's like, that's, so I was like, all right, well, after that, like, a year had happened, went by, and, you know, I just was, like, working things out, you know, helping with my son, trying to just make sure that he's taken care of while trying to figure everything out. And I'm like, dude, why did I allow a corporation to have my life in their hand, and then they just, it doesn't matter what goes on in my life, they don't care. It's all about their numbers and their bottom line. So I was like, yeah, there's no way that I'm ever going to allow myself to be in a situation where someone can just, I mean, who knows what could, like, if I could have been, if I was an erratic person, who knows what I would have done in that volatile situation.
Exactly, and it's so, this is the thing I always hate about it. Watching it happen to somebody, hearing about it happen to somebody, or experiencing it myself, is that there's such a, it's like a switch flips, and these people that used to treat you warmly are just the coldest people while firing you. Mm-hmm. Just like, one of the people to me said, well, you know you had problems, and I'm just like, what? Just like, what? And by the way, there was a folder on the table that was supposed to be like any write-ups that I had. Nothing was in it. Like, there was a piece of paper, and I looked at what the piece of paper was. It was just, like, something they wanted me to sign saying, like, yeah, I was fired or something, yeah, something like that. Yeah, it was just like, yeah, there was nothing in there.
I'm definitely not signing anything either.
It's just like, yeah, no, dealing with that, it's interesting because I think 2020 has been kind of transformative in that I think it's woken up a lot of people who you think, a lot of people always feared worst case scenario, you know?
Mm-hmm.
People feared being furloughed. They feared being fired. And because of COVID, that happened to a lot of people anyway. And I think a lot of, some people reacted with, you know, or even me and you went into the year like kind of disenchanted with our own lots in life or our positions at the moment. A lot of people saw all of it as the perfect moment to finally do their own thing. Because, let's face it, me, I probably would have just stayed at Kenosha News for a long time, just wrote it out, and, or, you know, quit at the end of the year and, you know, figured something else out. Because it's comfortable.
Mm.
I mean, I mentioned this in a video the other day. Just by quitting Kenosha News, I automatically, in the end, now that I have subscribers and everything, lost $30,000 a year. Like, just in a text, just up in smoke. Health coverage, everything like that. So just gone. And it was funny, I didn't realize that for months, but there's a lot of people who can't do what I did. Even though they want to. There are a lot of people that do. But the thing is, there's a lot of things you have to accept about the reality of taking a moral stand. I think I was very... maybe you experienced this too when you started blowing up, but there is a weird kind of almost stealthy ego thing that starts to happen with yourself.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I literally, like, this morning I posted, just on my Instagram, I was like, I posted it because I wanted people to say mean things to me, because people just say nice stuff to me all the time. So I was like, tell me how you really feel about me.
Right.
And then I check it, and I'm like, no one is saying anything negative, though. I'm like, please nitpick me, because I try to do it myself, but you can only check your own ego without, like, encountering something, you know, that actually really makes you think about it.
Well, exactly that, or, like, if you put yourself down too much, people will think you're starting to fish for things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Which, if I need encouragement, I'm just going to tell you flat out, like, you probably see me post, like, hey, guys, having a bad day, and, like, I just go at it straight, but... No, it's, with me, it was, I started to get an inflated ego, and I didn't realize how inflated it was becoming. Because you have people encouraging you the whole time. Like, even when I was making the decision, or I almost, you know, revealed who had made that headline, it was very, like, a hostage situation that I did. People were like, yeah, I'm all about that energy, do it. And thankfully, like, other people were saying, like, dude, don't do that. Like, that's a really bad idea. Like, don't do that. And I listened to them and thought about it and realized, like, had I done that, I'd have lost everything I'd built. Because suddenly, I would have just done the same thing that person did, but on a very micro scale. I mean, me revealing that person's name would have affected one family instead of, you know, what they did, you know, kind of affecting an overall group of people, of movement, perhaps. Mine would have been much more specific. So I think it was at that point that I started to realize, like, I'm not right with myself, you know, as far as, like, I was not myself. I had an inflated ego, and I had to, like, start realizing that I had to pull myself back quite a bit. But I don't know, a lot of the issues here locally are about ego, especially lately.
Yeah. A lot of the, there's a lot of stuff that's happening, a lot of, like, positioning that's happening, a lot of, just a lot of things that are, in my opinion, questionable. And I don't understand why people aren't, you know, really asking questions about the types of things that are going on. It's really, really interesting. You know, like, it's not just individuals. Like, there are individuals that, you know, and it's hard to even to necessarily, like, point at individuals as an individual, because it's like, well, what about you? Look at everything that you've done. And it's, and I know that everything that I've done, I'm sincere in what I do. So, like, I know you probably shouldn't, like, cast blame on other people, but it's like some of the moves that are being made that are so apparent of what they are. It's like, I'm not just trying to, like, attack people to say, like, I'm a saint or anything. No. But it's like, yo, like, everything that I've done, you can, like, check, and, like, I haven't, like, done anything to position myself to gain a bunch of stuff inorganically.
Yeah, you know?
Yeah.
It's... Kenosha really frustrates me lately because, okay, I remember back, even, okay, think back to that, the protest that led to my resignation. And I remember, because remember I told you, I think this is the event, you know, we'd been waiting for. Me and you had been going to all these things. Like, it was, looked like it'd be so peaceful and so great.
Right.
And now that I think about it more and more, that day is like, it was more of a missed opportunity than I think I really realized. Because on that day, even though there had been egos among different people, different groups, everybody, because let's face it, Black Lives Matter or any other movement that's happening now is bigger than any one individual, is bigger than any one group. And speaking on behalf of the whole can lead to a lot of tension.
Right.
Like, I once got a letter addressed while I was at Kenosha News, or an email that was addressed to the Kenosha News from the Black community. You have no idea how angry that
is. Yeah, it's like, what?
Yeah. I'm just like, damn, did I miss a meeting? Like,
the whole community wrote this one letter.
Yeah.
And I wasn't there to help, you know, make sure the punctuation was on point.
Need to call somebody and make sure that they have my correct address. Like, for the membership. But no, it was just like, moments like that, just, it would piss me off so much, because when we all reached a point where we could accept each other for what it was and realize that we're all trying to work towards the same things, even though, let's face it, there are people that I don't agree with how they're approaching things at all.
Mm.
I call them out here and there, but I mostly stay out of it. But I think there was a time where we were all accepting that what we were trying to do was bigger than any one of us, or bigger than any one person's solution or methodology. And I think after that, things started to fracture, because you started to see groups fall away, other groups pop up, you'd start to see people become louder in certain groups, or things became so muddled after a while. That even now, and I kind of, I posted about this yesterday because it hit me, is when you think about everything that's been done since May, everything you've documented, everything I've documented, everything we went through, and that is still happening, people still protest and everything around the city, what meaningful things have been accomplished?
So, and this is just me being, you know, just being me, and I feel fair. I haven't really seen anything be accomplished.
And that's,
like, nothing substantial. Like, individuals have benefited, and I'm not saying that people shouldn't benefit, right? Like, I mean, there's a lot of opinions right now, especially with, like, Portia, right?
Oh, yeah.
I grew up with Portia. Like, I went to middle school with Portia. To see her on Time Magazine, like, I
can't say, awesome.
And knowing that she was out there all of the time, seeing that she was, you know, she got tear gas and all that stuff too, to, like, just because she's on Time Magazine doesn't mean that we need to, like, we need to congratulate her and just utilize that and use that to continue to press forward. If, like, if that's the goal, if the goal is to have people understand and recognize you, then work with the people that are being recognized, you know?
Exactly. For one, Portia is somebody who... Portia runs up into things before I even run into things. Like, with the militia there...
By herself, she'll, like, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I was walking up, and I'm talking, like, Ariel or somebody over here, and then I see Portia just walking towards them. I'm like, I'm gonna go follow Portia. You know? Because she doesn't care. If Portia is somebody of conviction. She will follow her convictions to the end. That's how I've gotten to know her. That's who she is. And so, yes, I was happy. I was ecstatic to see her or anybody from Kenosha on Time Magazine, especially talking about the protests, talking about social justice, especially because of kind of the response people have received locally or the way that people have tried to delegitimize those voices locally. And yeah, it reminds me of stuff my father used to tell me about growing up in Racine as a poor black kid. How people used to taunt him in his neighborhood, other black kids, they'd call him, I think it was, the professor. Because he studied, he got good grades, he did everything he could to try to get out of the poor black neighborhood. And that's... unfortunately, a mentality among us, particularly as I've known it in my life, among the black community and communities of color, it's any time somebody tries to move their life forward or get out or collectively move the group closer to being out of where they've always been, somehow somebody has to try to tear them down. As if somehow they're not black enough anymore, or they're, you know, siding with, you know, white people, or, and I'm just like, what?
Yeah, things get pretty ridiculous, and I mean, I deal with it a lot too, you know, and it is what it is. I've dealt with it pretty much forever though, so
yeah, right.
I'm kind of built for it, you know. Like, I grew up on the north side. I lived with my grandmother. There wasn't another black family that moved into the neighborhood until I was, like, a teenager, you know? So, like, there was all of the experience of the ups and downs of, can I go over to this friend's house? Is the dad randomly going to just, like, snap on me or something because I happen to be a black kid? You know, like, all, like, and then black kids being mad at me when I go to middle school because all of my friends from elementary school were white because that's the neighborhood I grew up in. So it's like, I'm not gonna, you want me to just not have friends? Like, you know, so it's like a vicious battle of like, oh, you're a white boy. Like, clearly I'm darker than most black people I encounter.
Right.
So it's like, what are you talking about?
It's, I don't know, it's so frustrating to watch because it's like, and, you know, I've been asked a lot lately about transparency and everything that's happened and reflections and thoughts on it. And the funny thing is that it's not just our systems that need to change, or we also need to change ourselves, because we are just as culpable, just as responsible in holding the community back as anybody else. Because think about how many times somebody's tried something or presented an idea that, in retrospect, probably would have really helped us out now. But everybody's like, no, no, get that person out of here. They don't understand us.
Right.
Everything's fine the way it is.
No real leadership.
Well, exactly. And I even thought about this today, because, and I didn't realize, didn't piece together, like, how frustrating this moment would have been had I thought about it at the time, is that, so after George Floyd, I remember I asked the mayor himself about, you know, if he ever worried about Kenosha becoming a city like that. And he responded that, of course he worries, but he believed that with the pause we have in place and with everything, you know, how we were reevaluating things, that, you know, we were going to be just fine.
So it took...
And then later on...
It took, what, 90 days? Not even 90
days?
It wasn't even
that, and Kenosha became the next thing. And, I don't know, a lot... People have the mentality, I think, of either, oh, it won't be us, or it's not us. As far as, it won't be us, just in denial of that could happen in our city, and it's not us, as far as all the bad things, all the things that are going wrong in the city. Yeah. Jacob Blake being shot, horrible. I mean, it should have never happened, in my opinion. But there have been a lot of Jacob Blakes. There have been countless Jacob Blakes in the Racine and Kenosha area, even throughout my 31 years. Where has the outrage been? Where was the outrage all the way to Racine being like the third worst place in the country for black people? It's disheartening for me sometimes when I reflect now, especially when thinking of what was accomplished, what actual things we get changed, what ordinances...
Right.
Got off the books.
So, not to be... So, like, people know that I don't subscribe to the left-right paradigm. So, I'm just going to be real, right?
Yeah.
So, the only thing that happened that is substantial change is Joe Biden got elected president. And however you feel about it is however you feel about it. I personally don't care. But in what I noticed... which is disheartening, because there was a lot of money coming into Kenosha. There was a lot of events going on. You have events that last 24 hours. We got people bringing food. We got music. We got all that. Joe Biden gets elected. Nothing happens after that. There's still events that happen. There's still protests, gathering. Where did all of the resources go? All of the resources are gone now. But the whole thing was about supporting Jake Blake, right? That situation's not done. So the resources should still be pouring in the way they were. You know, in a red flag, and I'm sorry, people can be upset if you want to, but when I was at Occupy Kenosha, and they have the screen come up, and it's this giant Joe Biden campaign ad, I'm like, yo, I thought this was about Jacob Blake. But, I mean... I've been saying follow the money since as long as I can remember.
Okay. Right?
So, like, that's what I always look at. So, when I show up places and I'm at events and I'm, like, I'm looking around and I'm giving my commentary, but I'm also seeing, like, oh, what, like, it takes money to make this stuff happen. Oh, and when exactly. Words, like, when the money just stops abruptly, it is, to me, a red flag. Like, what was the real goal? And the only thing that I, the only outcome of everything that's taking place was Joe Biden got elected.
And that's kind of the sad thing to me. And it's always been sad to me, kind of, how political parties adopt causes and therefore make them not something everybody's open to. Like, think about BLM and things like that. So obviously Democrats jumped on that one.
Right.
And of course, Republicans jumped on a long time ago, you know, trying to overturn Roe v. Wade and family values and things like that. But when these issues become so political, we're not able to do anything about them because they've been politicized, there's a whole swath of people that refuse to talk about it or accept it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same way I feel about many, many things, but that's why, honestly, so at the height of my fame or whatever, where, you know, I'm always being interviewed and everything, and Biden and Trump both came to town, I stayed as far away from both of them or anything like that as I could, because me, sure, it would be cool to either talk to a sitting president, regardless of who it is, or to, you know, meet a potential future president. But I could not allow myself or what would become the Uptown Observer to become a political animal. Because I know what people expect me to say and where they expect me to lean.
Mm.
Just because, regardless of anything else, in the end, my resignation will always be tied to Jacob Blake.
Mm.
And I'm fine with that. But I can't live in that place where people expect me to be one thing. Because I'm not.
Right.
I mean, like you, I'm never going to be a diehard right or left, really. I mean, I have my things that I believe. Mostly nowadays, as I get older, I'm just like, I don't care just what's making things better.
Right. Exactly.
All we do is yell at each other, and we haven't done a thing besides that.
Yeah.
And think about this. So, yeah, you pointed, so much money was coming out of Kenosha, and obviously, not even just in one place. I mean, if you had a GoFundMe in Kenosha during those months, most likely you exceeded your goals. Like, you look at all of them and they were filled.
Yeah.
There's so much attention, so much that could have been done in Kenosha, especially when all the national attention was on everything. But the thing that I find continually frustrating about, especially younger people, when they want change, is that if you want to change a system, if you want to change a world, if you want to change a government, you first have to know how that world, government, or anything functions. You have to know how to work within that system. And truly, if you want people to change a system, learn how to work the system as well as they can, and they won't want those loopholes anymore. But no, I see protesters, and protesting is a good tool. But if you want change, you can't just protest. You have to watch government meetings. You have to actually watch what's happening. Because while you're out talking, screaming for justice and things like that, behind closed doors, government officials can be just robbing your whole community blind or moving things away from you or doing whatever they want to redevelop or reshape or redesign things that mean something to you. But you're too distracted and too caught up in trying to be loud that you don't know how to be informed.
Yeah, like, good example of that is the, the county board supervisor meetings that everyone was attending this year, you know, with the body cam legislation that they were trying to get, ordinance that they were trying to get in for the budget, you know? There's a lot of passion, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But the inner workings of how these things, how they're going to be executed, and that needs to be looked at as well, you know? Like, the technology piece, you know? Like, again, like, I don't want to involve myself.
Oh,
but
I remember.
I'm sitting around, and I'm like, yo, no one's going to, like, no one wonders if this is actually real or not. Like,
I remember you walking up and asking a question. I was like, just silence. Okay, yeah.
But those are the things that we... That's what we have to know, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if we're going to have people in these positions that are going to make decisions on things that we want done, we have to, for one, know how it works, like you say, so mm-hmm. we know that they're not just saying things or doing whatever they want.
Exactly.
But we also have to make sure that the people that we elect that are in there actually, like, aren't just there to be the face and actually are of sound mind to make decisions and actually think critically when things are happening to maybe think of intricacies of a situation that people normally wouldn't think of, you know?
Oh, exactly. And here's the thing that I found fun recently. So, should I say his name? an alderman. So there was an alderman that recently, you know, made a big show of, well, it's the same alderman, you know, it's Rocco LaMacchia. So anyway, LaMacchia had, he made, there, back when the liquor license thing, or the cabaret license issue was going through, the Tavern League had that, you know, meeting where both Anthony Kennedy and LaMacchia were there. And I remember LaMacchia made a big deal of telling the Tavern League people, like, you know, I got your back, and I have it sent back to committee and everything like that. So when you listen to the actual meeting and you look at the vote and you listen to the vote, he actually voted for it. And me and Kennedy talk, and we both just sat there like, because we'd been at the earlier meeting where, you know, everybody was railing on Kennedy because of his support for the cabaret license, like, changes. And yet, he was honest about what he was going to do and everything like that. But then you had an alderman who said that he was going to do one thing and then did another. And you think, so, unless somebody's watching the meeting and sees that this person voted contrary to what they said they would anybody ever think that they didn't keep their word?
No. Not if you're, you know, a figure in the community that people know and trust, and, you know, exactly, with open arms and, you know, come out and defend when they say ridiculous things, you know?
So it's just interesting. It's interesting the blind spots I think people have. And I like, I was covering something, and it was all about, this is the most cringe thing, but I've been to more than one seminar or something held by some business alliance talking about how do we work with millennials in the workplace? Oh God. But one of the presenters did bring a point of talking about how different generations have approached information or things that people tell them. And the thing that they said for Generation X, I think, is very fitting for now. Especially when you're dealing, okay, when you're dealing with people that you've trusted, people you've respected, trust but verify. Anything somebody tells you, anything somebody says they're going to do, you can trust them. It's okay to trust people you've known for a long time. But you better verify that they actually did it. So, it's just interesting to me. There's so many different versions of people they're able to create for however they want to be perceived by the public at a given moment. And the reason why Kenosha, I think, and many cities are in the position that they are, nobody ever took the time to see if that person was really that person. If they really made decisions or voted in the way that that persona, that thing that they said they are, would stand based on my experiences. I mean, I'll be honest, the majority of lawmakers or people that are on city councils and things like that, they truly love their community and they want the best for it, that I've encountered throughout the different states that I've worked. But there are some that don't particularly care about what the people want or what's best for everybody. They want what they think is best or what's best for the people that they think are good for the community. And it's disheartening to encounter people like that, especially in my own kind of hometown area. Because I honestly, I think about 5 years. It took me 5 years of experience of working those 10 to 12 hours, 6 days a week in Indiana, of working nearly 7 days a week in Nebraska. 5 years of all that because I wanted to get back to Kenosha and be part of my community again. And it's very disheartening to come back to my community after working for 5 years to get back and find these types of people in power. But
I mean, it's kind of how, like, unfortunately, kind of how it goes and it's been, you know, at least from what I've been gauging. I've been trying to speak to a lot of older people in the community that just kind of have more of a gauge on how things have been, because, I mean, you see a lot of the stuff going on now, and I'm like, That's strange, you know, like, has it always been like this? Have these, like, random moves and plays always just been like this? And apparently it's been like that for a while, you know? And, I mean, Al Capone had a house in Carroll Beach, you know, so...
Yeah.
You know, so I'm sure that, you know, kind of...
Everybody knows the behind-the-scenes things about Kenosha and all the stories. We never talk about them publicly because it's almost like the boogeyman. But the way that, and it goes back to it, and as you said, like, the thing that I found more encouraging about anything this summer is how many young people were getting involved. And how many young people I saw actually coming to, like, government meetings and things like that. Because, honestly, seeing a young person at a government meeting is, like, rare. It's like if you saw an alien in a McDonald's ball pit, and he looked at you and just said, "What's up?" Like, that's it. Like, that's how rare it was to see, like, young people at a government meeting for me through basically 7 of the 8 years that I've been doing it. This last year is the first time that I've actually seen young people getting involved and getting involved in meaningful ways. But the thing is that they also don't know how to be involved in a civic way. And the unfortunate thing is that it's a common trait, not only in the younger groups, but you see it bleed through even to the older people or older generations that are involved in activism or who show up to meetings or want to hold people accountable. Is they don't know the rules, the kind of environment of government meetings, and that you don't, in order for government, in order to get something done in a government way, loud is not your friend. A loud tone is never your friend.
No, they're just gonna...
People get defensive right away, and it's like, yeah, I don't want to do anything for that person. Guess what? If you want to talk to lawmakers, if you want to get changes, speak calmly.
Yeah, and it's, yeah, one thing I noticed is they don't, lawmakers don't seem to, I mean, they'll just, if they're upset, they'll show that they're upset.
Oh, exactly.
Like,
exactly.
They don't care. They're like, oh, if you're just going to yell at us, then we're just going to.
Exactly.
Go. I'm like, yo.
Yeah, right? Like, and I don't appreciate, like, I don't agree with it, but it's like, I don't agree with the reaction, but at the same time, you can't wish people were a different way and base your movements off how you wish they were, what you wish they'd take. The old generations, they can't take excessive swearing and they can't take just yelling.
Right.
It's not...
And criticism.
Exactly. It's... yes. But, like, in some ways, I think in back in the day, it was seen as rude or something like that. It just wasn't part of conversation. Like, you didn't even use to ask your parents, like, how much you make or anything like that. Like, but... Or how much they paid for anything. It's just... I wish that there was somebody or some group that saw these things and either changed their methodology or realized that civic education is maybe the better thing to focus on, or a better thing to focus on partly. Because nothing's... This is not something that's going to change overnight. I mean, this is something that's going to take years to make Kenosha better. And I feel like people are trying to push and rush change, but meaningful change, actual change that doesn't end up biting you later on when you realize the unintended, you know, consequences. It takes time. And it takes different methods. And I think 2021, I'm hoping that in Kenosha, we not only actually talk as people, not as, you know, Republican, Democrat, or Independent, or, like, Black, White, well, we will still talk as Black and White, because that is always going to be...
As long as America is America, how
it is. Exactly. But it's, we have to be honest about, I don't want any more lofty things. I don't want, from a city officials, activists, from anybody, think realistically about what can we accomplish in a year's time if we all put our egos aside, if we all just accept that the cause and a better Kenosha for everybody is what we need to collectively focus on and only focus on. You could, instead of me and you sitting here thinking, what did they get done this past year? Or what did anybody get done? Or what significantly got done here in response to everything? We could have a whole list if that's what people did. But everybody either wants recognition or they want things their way and they won't compromise. Guess what? Change is a series of compromises. It really is.
Yeah.
You just keep pushing forward and hoping that the compromise keeps pushing things forward.
Yeah, it's kind of like, even like with the body cam thing, right? I mean, I guess we could say that was successful. Even though, it was watered down from...
It was watered down.
They shredded pretty much all of it, and they're like...
Here was my thing, is... Why didn't we have them?
Yeah.
I was in a city, so when I talk about Indiana, I was in a city of 6,000 and they got body cams.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the police chief was like, noticed that all this stuff was happening to the police. I mean, he was not a fan of BLM and things like that. Let me put it that way. But, or of, police reform or anything like that. And yet, even he realized the community wanted it. So he researched different kinds of cameras, the image that they projected, and he actually was thoughtful about it because he decided with a lens for a very specific reason. Even though you could see more with other lenses, he wanted the one that would be most accurate to what exactly the officer was seeing or could see with their own eyes. So, even in a small city that was largely Republican and conservative and went all for Trump, basically, in 2016, leadership listened and saw that they needed to be proactive. And they had those conversations about how do we store all of it, hired a company to come in and take care of all of it and all this. Why is a city of 6,000 able to do that, and yet a city of 100,000 in a bigger metro area where this is clearly more, it's more likely this will be an issue. Why did it take George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and then Jacob Blake locally for the police and sheriff to have body cameras?
And even then, they're like, well, I believe the reason why they said they felt they didn't need them was because there are cameras in the squad cars. And the squad cars will capture everything.
Yeah, we can see how well that went.
I was like, yo, and no one said anything. No one was like,
I know, you're just, sometimes.
I was going to say anything about that.
It's almost an unenviable position of being, like, somebody documenting things, or especially, well, with me, particularly as, like, a journalist, but an independent journalist, is I try not to insert myself too much. So even I'll sit there and I'll be thinking these things and I look around and I'm like, really? Okay.
We're just gonna just let this slide escape right under it. It's crazy.
Yeah, no, it's, I don't know.
No one has questions? There's all of these people and not one person has a question about this.
Yeah.
It's just like, there's no way that not one, there's like 18 people here that can have a voice, and no one has anything to say.
Exactly, and here's the things that, because I don't want to beat up Kenosha too much. Like, we're in a spot right now, I think, where I think there's many opportunities for common ground or middle ground or at least some empathy. Because think about this, 2016 election was devastating for anybody who was a Democrat, I guess. Liberal, anything like that, because, they were going into a presidency that they thought would ruin the country. Now, in 2020, we have the other side who are looking at a Democrat presidency that's coming in And the ones who accept it are against it. The ones who don't accept it are still going, I guess. I'm still getting messages from one particular person that I've been, like, has been commenting on my stuff. Just after Wisconsin Supreme Court, after Electoral College vote and everything, just like, there is zero chance Biden will be president. And I'm just like, what? But I get that emotion. And that's why I'm not, like, upset. I don't think as upset as I would be by the behavior, because I felt those things. I remember what it was like to be more of a Democrat liberal in 2016 and feeling like I was. So now when I see people on the opposite side of that spectrum going through it now, I don't respond with anger or anything. I'm like, I honestly, with that person I just talked, like told you about, I have bent over backwards to not respond dismissively because I understand, like, I get it.
Yeah, you know, like, the emotion comes from the same place, even though you may feel differently about it. It's like, if that were to happen to me with, like, the person that I was, like, all in with, I would feel the same way. It's like, there's no way, because it's like, having your own perception, that's all you know. So it's like, I can't understand how people don't feel the same way.
Yeah, right.
But it's like, of course you don't, because you can't feel what other people feel. So it's
exactly, and it's, I don't know, it's, I'm hoping that other people look at it how I am and remember how they felt, and instead of coming back with the, well, they treated us like that, so,
yeah,
you know, it's sucks to suck, man. Like, no, it's, now is a good opportunity for one, I don't think anybody, if your country is doing as well as it should, I don't think there should ever be anybody devastated or feeling like the world is going to end because one person won over the other. If you're in good shape, it should not be the end of the world.
I mean, it might, like, you might have to, like, reevaluate a few things, maybe, but, like, your life generally should still be all right. You should be okay.
Exactly. And
the whole society isn't shifting. Like, one person, one person in their cabinet is shifting out. I mean,
yeah.
I suppose, like, the power, it's more than one person, I suppose, but it's still not significant enough for your whole life to feel like it's in shambles now.
Exactly. And nobody should feel like that, either in 2016 or 2020. And the fact that we are so divided as a country on these things and on who's going to do something, maybe it's us. Maybe the thing is that if you listen and talk to protesters and you talk to the people that have been out there and what they're saying, everybody's kind of saying the same things. If you remove the red and blue or anything like that, the labels that we normally put on,
right,
people would cluster together much closer than you think.
Yeah, I mean, I see it firsthand, even like with the stuff I do, you know, like the back of the badge rally where like Sheriff Clark came, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, people were like, you're really gonna go? It's like, you're, like, I was looking at my comments like, dude, be careful, you're in the middle of the, I'm like, yo, like, it's gonna be all right. And there's people coming up to me, shaking my hand, taking pictures of me and stuff, because it's like,
yeah,
it's like, everyone is just a person. I don't hate any of these people. I might even agree with some of these people in here on something that, whatever, if we have a conversation.
Exactly.
As long as you're open to it. And it's like, anyone that approaches me, I'm not saying that, like, get away from me. Like, you're a racist. Like, I don't know you at all. You know, and so many people came up to me with open arms. It's like, how can I just label this entire group a group of racist people when so many people were so nice to me?
Exactly. And that's the thing that sucks, really. And that's the thing that's so hard. Like, it's well documented that I didn't have the best time at a Back to Blue rally, but here's the thing, is that it wasn't all of them, and that's the disheartening part, is that, so when the fighting was going on the outskirts, so you see the flurry over there, but there was a group that just always kind of stayed around the middle, around Clark.
Mm.
And those people didn't like throw hands or anything at anybody. Like they were just very much, gung-ho about David Clark. But there were definitely people that were there just to like fight. And you saw that. I mean, one of them even punched a cop. Which, honestly, my favorite moment out of this whole entire year,
Because it's one of the moments where it's like surprise.
I
It's
think. Yeah,
like
then they're just.
actually that's the people that you love, you know?
Yeah,
And
it's.
it's a great moment because it kind of highlights like you see we're all just people. You thought it was somebody that was against you, but it's actually someone that you support. And based off of their appearance, you thought it was okay to punch them.
Yeah, exactly. And it's. And, I thought about that and things like that a lot when I started setting up like the Uptown server and thinking about, okay, how do I want to be different than I was at Kenosha News or different than the other outlets that are popped up? Because honestly, if I was just going to do the same thing I was doing under Kenosha News, I would just get out of the game. I either want to offer something new or I don't really want to offer anything at all. I've done it for 8 years. 8 years is more than enough to do one thing in my mind. But it's that the crux of things for me, or the biggest problem that I've seen, and it's in the disconnect between journalists and their community and all these, in a lot of situations, is we used to look at news stories or stories about people and first remember they were people. There was humanity there. You would be shocked reading what somebody did because you couldn't imagine how somebody could do that. Now, when we read stories or when people approach stories, we're almost shocked that somebody didn't do something worse, And it's, we look at people for their charges. We look at people for whatever quote is put in that's attributed to their name. But we look at it and read it, but we never really connect it to a person. Not in any real way. I mean, this person said that because, yeah, their name's right next to it. But you don't get any of how they said it. You don't get their tone. You don't get whatever emotion was in their voice, anything like that. And that's why, obviously, you do pretty much, you're exclusively like a video guy, which is great. I think it's the, live video has been the saving grace of everything, I think, because it's the most objective you can really get from what you're seeing. But I inject a lot, I record a lot of things, I videotape a lot of things that I do because I like putting those in there. Especially if I write something too, because you can read the words, but I also want you to see how these people are. Because honestly, even the people that most people think are horrible or that they disagree with based on their political party or views, if you talk to them as a person, they're really pleasant, really nice. They may have misguided views, but they don't treat you like you're nothing, or they don't hate you because of those views. They're like you. They have convictions and they have faith and their beliefs and what they believe is right and wrong, and those were formed over how many decades or years they've been on the earth. So to take all of their experiences and whatever emotions, thoughts throughout all those years led to their beliefs being solidified in their life, and just throw that out simply because it's not what you like, I don't think that's good. And I think that's kind of how we wind up where we're at.
Yeah, and like it's like people care more about the thing opposed to the person, right? So like way back in the day, right? I just watched this Ronald Reagan documentary, just kind of like that. It was on Showtime. It was like a four-part thing that documented from like the beginning to like the end, and how like him being an actor was like it's really, really crazy how he was like the first one, and you kind of notice all of the presidents after him kind of adopted that model, and now it's kind of, if you don't do that, you're not going to win.
Yeah.
But like, it was funny, like, because in his, like, in his inception, like, he was just like a regular person, right? But a tabloid, I believe it was a gossip columnist, like, took him under her wing. And she, like, molded him as this person, right? So people cared about him because of this person that they created, you know, back in the day when people cared about the person.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, the shift, I don't know what it was. Maybe it's the media, because you have more control if it's not the person, but it's the thing. And then you can swap the people out for the thing. And then you consistently kind of have something that you can turn into content. And if it fails, you just replace it with something else.
I think I know what it was. So I think it started with the 24-hour news cycle. Or when you started seeing a lot of talking heads or people saying things on the news and things like that. Because think about it. All you wanted so was, okay, let's say I need a Democrat, a Republican, and an Independent. You're not thinking about, okay, who would be good to talk about this? Just like, yeah, I just need those three to make it fair. Okay, we'll figure out who's best for that, but just make sure that we got those and we'll be fine.
Right.
It's very much, like you're saying, people are interchangeable as far as, it would be like, and this is how it feels sometimes, is let's say they couldn't get you, so they're just like, yeah, let's get Daniel. He's kind of similar, right?
It's like, it's a black dude, right?
Yeah, it's a person of color.
Yeah, for sure.
You know,
well, yeah, right.
But it's kind of like that. People used to mean something to us.
Mm.
People meant things.
And you know what? I think people still mean stuff.
They do.
Because, like, if that wasn't the case, then I would be nowhere, right? Like, my whole idea about, like, everything that I've done from the beginning was, even when I like formed an LLC to be able to handle money and stuff coming in and stuff, like, the product is still Corey, you know, like, it's still me. It's not like Corey working for something and it still goes back to, you know, whatever the entity is. It's like, no, it's me. So it's like, we're gonna, like, on every level, you're just dealing with Corey, you know, and people want it, right? And, like, not talking about anyone specific, but I've had meetings with all different types of, you know, like, people want to work and stuff, and I'm open to collaborate and stuff like this. But what I notice is a lot of them don't understand, like, they're operating as the old guard, and they don't understand, like, yeah, like, no, like, you can, like, swap people in and out for stuff, like, that'll work generically.
Yeah.
But, like, now in the age of YouTubers and, like, personalities, like, people want people again.
Oh, okay.
Like, people will deal with entities because, I mean, in a way, you have to right now.
Oh, yeah, they're like a gatekeeper.
Yeah, they have the control, but the control is slowly coming, slipping away from them.
Right,
and it's going back to the individuals and to the personalities. That's why a person like Jake Paul, you know, can fight an NBA player and make $1 million, you know, like, based off of just his name. It's not, you know, it wasn't Nickelodeon that created him. It's literally, people are looking for people. They're not looking for the corporations anymore.
It's funny you say that, because I think that was one of the, it was an early realization I had when I started The Observer. Because honestly, so when I was starting, I was still thinking like a print journalist. So I was almost starting out with a concept in my head that was almost mimicking the Kenosha News and Ways, or even taking the elements I had put in there and almost like trying to reclaim them like I ever can. But over time I realized that the people that are supporting me, and I accept that I'll never be a Lee Enterprises or a Kenosha News, or, you know, I'm very okay with always being the underdog and focusing on the things I want to focus on, with my newspaper, with my company, whether I'm the editor-in-chief or when the day comes where I am not, and I just own and kind of oversee, but it's, very much now, and you see it across journalism too, because people follow specific reporters, is that it is very much, it used to be the newspaper was the thing that was notable about a product, like the name and the clout of the newspaper, but more and more it's becoming that reporters and journalists themselves, these individuals, are becoming the product. And it's a realization that I had, because I'm just sitting there and I'm, you know, like working on stuff and dealing with still the whole people want to talk to me about, you know, everything that just happened in Kenosha News and everything. And it just hit me that it really doesn't matter what exactly I do because I'm the product. And I don't have to evolve my style or anything like that, because I've been building the product for 8 years. Right. So it's like, it's almost a freeing feeling. And it's a lot like what you, like I've had people approach me with offers and stuff like that. Like, hey, we know you want to, like, I could have worked at so many big name newspapers. Like, I had offers. It was, would have been a dream for any other person who's in journalism who wants to reach a higher level or, you know, move to a bigger community. But I didn't want any of that, because I like the approach of being people-based. I like that my product is me for now. I mean, later on it'll have to switch, you know, and be more general and big. But starting out from me, because for one, I have to see if all the stuff that I've talked for years is like, I was right, you know?
Like, you gotta challenge yourself.
Exactly. I couldn't have just said all this stuff for all these years and then be like, oh, I have the opportunity, but I'll just, yeah, that was right. So it's actually testing it out, but it's actually more rewarding, because in the capacity and, you know, having just the freedom as the person that owns it and runs it, is that I don't have to adhere to the cold, indifferent observation that normally journalists do. I don't have to follow the AP style or AP approach to the note. I can develop however I want my particular brand of journalism to be, while of course maintaining accuracy and objectivity. But it's just, how do I tell stories now after 8 years? How do I want to look at things? And, you know, over time you've kind of seen me roll that out and seen it kind of evolve and different things I want to do. But it's, yeah, everything that we do now, I think, especially the new guard coming in, is that people do want people. I think people badly need to feel others' humanity now. Because I think we got so far away from it, especially when you think of recent elections and how many groups have demonized each other, is that people badly want to be able to feel the humanity in other people again, so that they can believe in other people again, I think. And because it's the old trick. If you want somebody to like you, or if you want somebody to change something, if you want somebody to do anything, you have to get that person to like you. People don't hurt people they like. So,
at least not on purpose.
Exactly. And so, you don't want to be alienated. I mean, I approach everybody with the same decency or professional composure as I would anyone else. I mean, it's, you have to treat people as people, and everything else that they are as the secondary thing. That's the color that fills them in, but fundamentally at their core, you're dealing with another human being.
And that's the most important thing. And that's something I try to say a lot, you know, especially over the summer. You know, we've been in so many situations, there's been so many different people, there's been such volatile, you know, situations that we've been in. Like, I mean, I almost got attacked at the freaking dinosaur museum. Some dude was peeing outside. I said something, and dude went to fight me because of it. And it's like, you know, like, it's just like all of these things happen. But at the end of the day, it's like, yo, we're all just people. You know? I know. Like, it's like everyone is just a person. So it doesn't matter if it's some crazy dude that is upset because I asked him not to pee because there's kids, or if it's because the mayor is here, or the chief of police, whoever I'm having a conversation with, it doesn't matter because they are literally a person. And people ask, like, yo, like, how do you do this? How do you interact with these people? How can you stay calm with people when maybe they're saying, like, some crazy stuff?
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, it's a person. Like, am I, like, they don't have a gun to my head.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'm not afraid. And also, like, I mean, I am also, like, a man, I suppose. So, like, I'm not as afraid in situations, you know?
Oh, yeah. No. So,
but it's, like, also, I'm not being mean to anyone. Like, I'm not doing anything where I should be afraid of anything.
Or
just because the person has a suit on, why should I feel like I can't have a conversation with them?
Oh, exactly. And, no, it's... I don't understand how we got to the point where I don't know. It's I genuinely enjoy talking to people. I do. Even people who have different views. Sometimes I find that fascinating, even more fascinating. And the thing I've really not appreciated sometimes about this time period is that we don't talk. We're not able to talk. Or people judge you for even talking to people that are on, like, have a different view than you. They're just like, why are you talking to that person?
Yeah, or try to stop you from talking to people that have a different view. And it's
exactly.
Like, what are you doing, man?
And it's like, that's how we wound up here. Don't you get that? Like, think about this. A whole social media platform just popped up for people that just don't want to deal with other, like, the other group,
yeah,
you know?
No.
So it's like, we have to be able to talk to each other, and we have to be able to do it. Well, just, dude, I can't count how many times somebody's just been saying the craziest stuff to me. Like, legit, not even, like, political, just, like, somebody's definitely having an episode, and they're talking to me while I'm interviewing them. And you just sit there, and you're not, and, like, you're paying attention, and you're noticing everything going on, and you're just like, best case scenario, best action, stay calm. Keep the conversation going, just listen, you know? But people get to believe whatever they want to believe. And I want to hear what people believe. I do. But if it's something crazy and I have evidence of that not being true, I'm going to present that to you.
Yeah, it's like, I'm not about to just let you just... Because, like, the point of having a conversation is to bounce ideas off of each other. And if I'm having a conversation with you and I know, not even like I know, or at least I feel that you are wrong because of the information that I have, I would be doing you a disservice not to present my information. Because how are you going to learn? Because there's been several times when I thought that, like, I was held strong in convictions that I had, and people presented me with information that I was able to review and go look at after the fact.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, oh, actually, I was freaking wrong.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
And that's, I think it's that it takes, I think what's hard for people oftentimes is that nobody wants to be wrong anymore.
Yeah, I know. Everybody knows everything.
Everybody's trying to win all the time. And like I keep referencing this person that keeps messaging me stuff, which I felt my phone vibrate, so I bet they did again. But like, it's that you can point out concrete evidence at every step of the way with every argument they come up with. They will come up with a new thing.
Mm. Yeah. And then it's like, all right, well.
There is no, like, just acceptance of, all right, we've gone far enough. I get it. You're right. No, it's just like, well, what about this thing that didn't really have any impact on the first thing?
It's like, all right, well, I think it's about time to...
Yeah, right? It's just like...
Oh, you can't do this all day, man. Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of that happened.
Oh,
I mean,
dude.
I bet you've experienced tons of people that, like, oh, is that... Hey, man, I just wanted to talk to you real quick. And it's like, dang, 30 minutes goes by.
I know.
Man, dude, like, dude, you're talking to me about sandwiches, bro. I need to go.
Dude, I used to, honestly, at the Kenosha, when I was at Kenosha News, I would get phone calls from this guy that was called the Sweetheart Swindler. Like, he literally was convicted around here, I believe, in the 90s, of swindling women out of money.
Oh.
He was one of those types of people.
Okay.
And he started calling me, like, once a week to try to tell his side of the story. And he's an old man now. He's talking about, like, you know, I was mistreated in prison. And I'm just like, dude, what?
Write a book, bro.
Yeah, I'm like, well, he wanted me to go to Canada, like, meet with him and, like, interview him and, like, expose all this stuff. I'm like, no. And the thing that I enjoyed about the conversations is when you realize that you're dealing with such a heavily narcissistic person, it is always interesting to slowly break that down over several conversations, because he opened the conversation with saying, I put Kenosha on the map, and he told me his name and his nickname, and I was like, I've never heard of you before.
Love that.
Yeah, I love that. And it's funny because you're going to start seeing a lot of that kind of stuff lately. Mm. And I'm kind of curious what everything will be like in 2021 and what will be said of everything in 2020. And who's going to take credit for anything positive that came out of it?
That's going to be very, very tasty. I can't wait to see that. I can promise you that I will not be.
I'm not even the one jumping out there.
So back in 2020, dude, remember back in 2020 when I was out on my skateboard and I was feeling that? I'm like, no, dude.
Yeah, no.
I'm trying to continue to move forward.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But you know what's going to happen.
Yeah, no, it definitely is going
to happen. People have already been online, people are already arguing about it. I've been here since day one. No, you haven't. Are you more than 400? You haven't been here since day one. You're coming into the middle of a fight that's been raged for hundreds of years. Let's just be clear about that.
Yeah, this is a continuous, like, you...
And two, screw you, I was there first. Like,
I don't remember seeing you.
Yeah, I don't remember seeing you.
I mean, there was a pretty big crowd, and I didn't see you in it, so...
Yeah. But no, people play to that all the time, and I'm just like, it doesn't matter who was here first. You're here now, and there's still work to do. Yeah. Let's just keep going.
Let's just get the work done. Because, and honestly, like, at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter unless you do something substantial, right? It's like, you were here from day one doing what, you know?
Yeah.
What, you know, like, what have you been doing since day one? If you can say, I've been here since day one, we did this week, we set up this, like, that's what should follow that. And it's like, and now we're going to continue doing this. You know what I'm saying? Like, from day one, I've been doing what I'm doing right now. I go out, I film stuff, I was doing podcasts and stuff. Like, I'm doing the same stuff from day one, you know? And, like, from day negative 270 or how, you know, like,
right?
So,
no, it's, I find it interesting endlessly. Any time that I've encountered protests or any groups of people trying to move something forward, the infighting that sparks, inevitably. And I always wonder to myself if they'll get through it or if they won't. Because it's really hard to stop infighting once it starts.
I know. Yep, and we won't get too kooky here, but one thing I do also, like, bring up to people that people seem to, like, forget, because, you know, there's a historical record of everything.
Yeah.
You know, some of the people that even came and spoke have firsthand experience with these systems, like COINTELPRO, you know? And it's like, people are probably always like, oh, conspiracy stuff. Like, COINTELPRO is a real thing. The government does always want to have some form of control and gauge what's going on, you know? So let's not forget, like, that's a thing. Like, this was a national thing. Like, the entire world was looking at Kenosha.
Exactly.
So, like, when infighting and things take place and, like, random like hiccups happen from people that aren't even necessarily members of the community, or certain people come in to try to like assume leadership positions and stuff. Like, as like, I'm an outsider, kind of, but also I'm a member of the community, so I'm not an outsider. So I'm also like, yo, hey, like, I don't run anything, but maybe people should look at, like, some of the stuff that's going on. I'm not saying people are doing nefarious things. I'm just saying there's definitely a possibility, like, we can't rule out that that would happen because it's happened time and time again.
Oh, exactly. And that's the thing. It's just like, and there are things that people that were out there for months know that probably could never prove with hard evidence, but you see it with your own eyes, like, there are things protesters and everybody witnessed over since the death of George Floyd and later the shooting of Jacob Blake that they'll never forget. That, I mean, again, nobody will ever have to answer for what happened.
Right. Exactly.
But we remember.
Yeah. Yeah, I literally was stared in the eyes of someone after asking them if they're from the community because they were trying to burn down the dinosaur museum, having them stare me in my eyes like I'm not a person. It doesn't matter. Like, I'm not a person, and it's like, it doesn't. I'm from all of the school. I went to all of the schools.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care what you have to say. I don't care about your children. We're going to burn down the museum. This same person is wearing an identical uniform to another person that is also trying to burn down the museum, to another person that I asked why they were in the back of a truck that exploded 10 minutes before trying to get debris so they can break windows. Like, you all have the same goggles, you have the same hoodie on, you all have walkie-talkies. Yeah. Literally, Jacob Blake got shot 4 hours ago, bro. So it's like,
yeah,
you know, it's like, so that's why I involved myself, because at that point I was like, this is way too suspicious for me not to say anything.
Oh, there were so many sketchy things happening in Kenosha around that time that honestly I didn't even know how to keep track of all of them. Like, I would have people messaging me all the time about stuff that was happening. I'm just like, you look at it. And I would even be there sometimes. I'm like, seriously? Like, just sitting there, like, The funny thing is that it became a narrative, really. For one, people always yell about, like, people from out of town and everything, like, oh, the Kenosha riots. The riots did this. You know how long the riots lasted? Two nights. Nobody from outside or that I hear, like, bring up the riots as a point, like, ever acknowledges, oh, the riots. Yeah, you mean the two nights? The two nights out of the, I don't know, several months people were peacefully chanting for change and things like that.
Yeah.
And then a person gets shot, like they said could probably happen here, and then things burn down. And when things burn, who's burning them?
Even the night of the shooting, right? So, like, this is the weirdest thing, and, like, if you watch my stream, like, you hear me be like, oh, that's really, really weird how that happened, right? So, at that point, this is where the Kenosha Guard or whatever and the protesters, they're all at the gas station on the corner of 60th and Sheridan, all there, people are talking to each other, you know, and all this stuff. The MREP comes down, it parks, it kind of riles the crowd up. And then they leave. And then, like, 5 minutes goes by, and, like, people just, like, get, you know, they're back to their conversations and all of that. All of a sudden, down the road, the freaking tire, the car lot is on fire. So I'm like, yo, people broke off and went to go set the tire, go set the car lot on fire. So I skate down there on my live stream, like, let's check it out, let's see what's going on. I get down there. The owner of the car lot has a pile of tires just in the middle of the lot. He just set it on fire, right? So I'm like, that's weird. Why would he just randomly light a giant fire in the middle of his car lot to, like, it brought attention to the area. Like, I, as soon as I saw it, I went straight there.
Yeah.
The entire crowd didn't go, but there was a few people that Lakota came with, and there was a few stragglers that came with because they wanted to extinguish the fire.
Yeah.
Because everybody isn't a horrible person. People are like, oh, there's a fire. Let's go put the fire out.
Yeah.
So we're going to go see what's going on. The owner's there, and as soon as we get there, then the MRAP comes around, and, like, the stormtroopers, like, file out, and it was like, it was weird because, like, they come straight to us. They don't go to the fire. They come straight to us. They start pushing us back, and I'm like, yo, it's literally me and, like, there's three other people. Two of us are documenting. The other two have a fire extinguisher saying, like, we were here just trying to figure out what's going on to put out the fire, but it looks like the owner of the shop set the fire. So then you see, like, a sergeant come out, and they go over to talk to him, and they keep on forcing us back. So I'm like, all right, well, I'm just going to go back to this way. And then after that, maybe like 10 minutes goes by, and then that's when the shooting and everything happens. So it was like, it was like a real weird, like, psychological thing that happened where I'm like, why would he light the fire unless maybe he was trying to incite people to go there and maybe destroy the property or something? But then the cops were there so fast. Where it's like, this is like, it was just really, really weird.
There are so many things about that time period. And this is why I say, there are so many things that nobody will ever have to answer for, but will never forget.
Yep, like that, I'll never, like, so many, like, super weird things. Like, I'll never forget, like, and then what happens?
Oh, there are little moments that I noticed, too. Do you know how many times there'd be... I think it was one protest around the Columbus statue. It wasn't the big one where everything kind of fell apart, but it was like a march or something before then. And I remember I was a little bit further down the crowd, and there were two officers that were near the protesters, obviously talking to them, and almost laughing, like they were like really just talking crap to these protesters. And then me and Jordan Pauly, I roll up with my lab video, and I'm still Kenosha News. And as soon as they see me with the video, they walk away. There's a whole bunch of weird stuff that happens here when nobody's looking.
Yeah, it's like, man, I just...
And that night...
Super sketchy.
I have rewatched your videos, I've looked at CJ's videos, I've looked at everything that I possibly could, and I don't think anybody will ever know everything that was going on that night.
Oh, no, that's why I'm like... The only thing that I know for sure is it was, in my opinion, we need to know what the motive was for him to rush down to the area. Because that's the only reason why I went that way, because he ran by me, and I'm like, the sketchy kid that's been chain smoking all day with the gloves on just ran by and no one's chasing him.
I noticed that.
So I'm like, why is he running? Like, where is he running to? So let's go figure, maybe something's happening. Let's follow. So I follow behind. I end up getting in ahead of him because he slows down. And then he's like maybe like 10 or 15 feet behind me when the shooting happens. So, yeah, it was weird because, like, I come down. The reason why I passed him was because in the car lot, there was people that were smashing a car. So I'm like, oh, okay, maybe he was running down to get down here. Maybe. But he never went over there. Because by the time I, like, started to go towards it, that's when the shooting happened.
Right.
So it wasn't because of that. Or maybe it was, like, I don't know. You know? It's like, but how would he have known to get all the way down there? Was he in communications with someone? Did someone... tell him to go that way? Like, there's so much, and that's why I feel like there's not gonna be a winner.
No.
Like, both sides are gonna be mad. The people that spent $2 million are gonna be pissed, and then the people that feel like he should go away forever are gonna be mad, because I feel like that's not gonna happen. I mean, maybe it will, but I honestly don't feel like it's gonna happen, because, like, if they can't, like, this is everyone's looking at. This is going to set precedent to what's going to happen. And, like, we're in Wisconsin. It's an open carry state.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to definitely lobby for the guns, you know? And, like, in my opinion, I feel like people should be able to have firearms. That's just my opinion.
Because, oh, yeah.
Like, you know, I So, you know, we know how things can get, you know, at times. Yeah. So I feel like people might need to be able to defend themselves if need be.
If need be, yes.
The government's not always going to protect you. But then also, though, like, there has to be some form of checks and balances where, like, I mean, he's underage, there's certain laws. And then also, like, optically, we're dealing with the whole, you have a whole community that's going to be like, yo, if that was me, you know where I would be.
Yeah.
And you've seen what happened, so act accordingly, you know? So it's a real volatile thing where they can't just, he can't skate.
No, he really can't.
But he, like, he also can't get off scot-free.
Here's the thing, is that I'm a cynical person because I've watched things go this way for so long. Anyway, anytime that something like a police shooting or something like that happens, is that I think 2020 will end in a heartbreaking note. I mean, I think by the end of the year, we'll get, a decision on Chesky, and I think he won't be charged. And I think Rittenhouse something has to happen to him. Mm-hmm. But honestly, I don't know what. And at this point, I don't know that it matters, because I think that in many ways, the damage with Rittenhouse has been done. Mm-hmm. Because think about it. Not only did Kenosians get to watch this militia kid kill two people, two protesters who, you know, cared about, who were people. Mm-hmm. People that meant a lot to many in this community and this area. And
yeah, even like the outside community. Anthony Huber has been, immortalized by the skateboard community, you know?
Just exactly. Because,
and that's how these communities work, you know? It's like, you're not just gonna, like, we're not gonna forget him. And no matter what you try to do to kind of smear him and make it seem like it's okay that he was killed, like, the skateboard community is not for that, because it's like, we will skate with whoever if you're a skater. It doesn't matter. It's about skateboarding. It's not about, you know, your home life or whatever it may be. No, if you bring, you know, that stuff to the skate park or whatever, that gets skate law or whatever, but, you know,
yeah.
So it's one of those things where it's like, it's not going to go away. You know, there's murals in skate parks all over the world for Anthony Huber. You know?
Exactly, and the reason why I say the damage is kind of done is that, so you watch somebody like Huber get murdered, and then you watch his murderer become a hero to a whole group of people. And that's why I say the damage is done, because if we're at a point in time where, as a people, any of us can look at that and call that kid a hero, I think we're at a kind of a point of no return, or a very important precipice that we need to step back from, or allege we need to step back from.
Yeah, that's like been the most, I mean, disturbing, I guess.
It's the hardest
way
thing to
view. Yeah, it's like, I understand feeling like he defended himself. Like, if that's the stance that you have, it's like, he was being attacked, he defended himself.
I can understand.
I understand that. Cool, if that's how you feel about the situation, for sure. I can't be mad at that. Based off of everything that we see, he was struck. If he felt like he was in danger and that's what he needed to defend himself, all right, whatever. I don't want to argue that.
Whatever.
Sure. But calling him a hero, though, is like, you're literally just poking the bear.
Yeah.
You literally are just, you're the only reason why you would do that would to upset people.
Exactly.
Because there's no, like, Superman saves people. He literally didn't save anyone else but himself. If Superman was in a situation and if there was other people around and he was the only one that made it out, he would feel like crap. And I'm not saying that Kyle Rittenhouse doesn't, like, I don't know how he feels. Maybe he feels horrible about, like, that's the one thing, maybe, until we actually hear him say something, maybe he feels completely horrible. Maybe he doesn't even want people to call it
labeled. Yeah, maybe he hates being labeled.
So, like, and it doesn't help his situation. Yeah, like, people, like, if you support him, and you want him to have a fair shake, and you don't want people to just hate him without knowing anything that's going on or looking at footage or anything like that, then label him accordingly.
Yeah, exactly.
Say this kid was in a situation and he did what he had to do to defend himself. And then people will still be mad, but it won't be nearly as many people.
Exactly. Because
I am probably one of the most fair people that you can encounter, maybe, when it comes to volatile situations like this.
Yeah.
And I get upset when people say he's a hero because he is not a freaking... He literally, he saved himself.
Yeah.
Superman would never just save himself.
Exactly.
And that's...
No, it's... I know. And honestly, that's the thing that... In all of it, I think the thing that bothers me most out of this here is that. Because it's so crushing. And it's so disheartening that that could happen. That people aren't horrified by those actions. Especially if they think that... There are people that... Like, last week when those militiamen were... They're from Milwaukee. And the thing that I find almost most offensive is that it's people from out of the city that are interfering in it. That are coming in and holding rallies or anything like that. And it's... Sure, you're within your right to do that. But you're a heartless bastard for doing that.
It's like... So, it's just symbolism. All you're doing is just your virtue signaling. At the end of the day, he's not at the courthouse,
right?
So it's you could have did a virtual event or something or
they could have done it anywhere.
You could just put a tweet out. There's no reason to you have freedom of assembly. Do whatever you need to do. But again, it's a volatile situation in a community. If it's not your community, why would you go to someone else's community and rile things up?
Exactly.
You know, and it's like, maybe that's not what your intentions were. But, this has been happening all year. Like, how would you not know what would happen? Of course there's going to be a form of counter-protest that happens. It's a lot. It's public. People know about it. It's in the city. When things happen in the city, there's going to be someone there with a camera that's live streaming. And once it gets picked up, more and more people start figuring it out, and it becomes a thing.
Well, exactly. And here's the thing that the thing that bothers me lately, and it bothers me, so I own guns, and I shoot guns. I took it up after I quit drinking because it focuses your mind just enough to where you can't think of anything else. So, you know, you go through the process of, okay, safety, you go through the process of just hammering in your head the safe ways to hold a gun, the safe ways that you carry a gun, how you treat a gun, especially if you're going to be around other people. And for me, and in any situation, I believe, a gun is a last resort. You have words first. You could be no regular person or do it how they used to do back in the day and just fist.
Yeah.
And then you can go up like knife and get like more permanent damage. But the people I see carrying, especially militiamen, they carry their firearms like it's their first step. Like if anything goes wrong, that is plan A.
It's typically like right here.
Yeah, it's like,
yeah.
And they're always like covered up and stand. When I passed by Civic Center Park like last weekend, after somebody called me about it, like, they're just standing on corners just holding assault rifles, just kind of, like, staring off. Like, it's a military operation. I'm like, what are you guys doing?
Yeah, it's, like, it's optics. And maybe it's because generally it's people that are a little older, and maybe they just don't understand how, like, I say this almost every single time I'm out. I'm like, optically, you have to act accordingly. Like, I'm here with a camera. I'm not turning my camera off.
Yeah.
There's nothing that you can say to me that is going to get me to turn off my camera. I don't care.
Yeah.
Like, you don't pay me. Like, I'm doing what I'm doing. I'm in public. There's no reason for me to turn this off. I don't care. Send whoever you want. It's not going to happen. You have to act accordingly. If you don't want something to be on this camera, then don't do it.
Exactly.
If you don't want people to spin what's going on, then don't put yourself in a position where it could be spun that way. Like, literally, that's the world we live in. I'm sorry that's the world we live in, but that's the world we live in. Like, I turn my camera off well before I'm at my house.
Yeah.
because I don't want people to know where I live. Everything that I do and I say, I'm well aware that people can see and hear everything that I'm doing.
Exactly.
So I'm not going to do anything that I don't want anybody to see or hear. It's like, and even when I'm on camera, I can still be on someone else's camera. So I have to worry about positioning, like who I'm standing next to, because someone will take a photo of me and I'm standing next to somebody and they're like, oh, look at Corey. He's a member of, you know.
I know.
No. And I ran into, and it was, you know, it was a slight hiccup, but it happened this summer with the big march that day of the big march. Because I was helping out Black because I happened to be in the area and they were like, someone contacted me. They were like, hey, you should come through to this thing. So I was like, all right, for sure. I ended up going.
And yeah, they called you out to the front, didn't they? Or something?
Yeah, so like it ended up being like I basically got drafted to do something, right? But like no one knew me. At least no one there knew me. So like they were like trying to direct me and then like gave me a shirt to like wear the shirt and stuff. And like I put it on for like a picture, you know, like with them, because I'm not like, sure, you want to take a like a photo, yeah. Whatever. I'm here, I'm helping you, so I'll do it. But also, I can't just be out and about just wearing the shirt because I have my own thing. I don't want to like people to think like I'm in your group. So it got to a point where like everything is about to start, and they're like, "Where's your shirt at?" And I'm like, "I took it off because I don't want to wear it.
Yeah, right.
I'm not a member, and like people know me.
Yeah.
So I can't just be like, if I put a t-shirt on, like people will think I'm a member of your organization, and then everything you do gets tied to me, and I'm not doing that.
Ooh, exactly.
Like I like as much like I'm gonna help you. I haven't like I went live from your platform, you know, I'll help you. I'm here to help. But I don't want people to think like I'm not with you. That's why I always say I'm not a part of anything, and I'm going to continue to not be a part of things because I don't want to be tied to other people's opinions or, you know, successes or missteps. Like I did, it's not me, you know. So.
No, dude, I get it because there are so many things that I pretty much had to step back from, especially when I decided to start The Observer, because there is that moment of calculation where you start to realize I can no longer afford to be as reckless.
Yeah. It's like I can't just randomly do whatever, you know?
I can't walk around wearing a BLM shirt every day or every event I go to and cover as The Observer. Everybody would just think that I was one way.
Well, exactly.
Even though clearly I have a stake in
like
that.
And that's the hardest thing probably for me. Like, yo, I am hella black. I am clearly a black person. Like, clearly.
Yeah, I mean, you're not like me in the winter. I can just, like, turn white and pass.
You know? A lot of this, like, people say stuff to me sometimes. I'm like, yo, you realize, like, I am a black person, right? It's like, I know I'm nice and I'm fair and all that, but it's like, yo, I'm still black, though, so, like, I'm not gonna, like, I don't feel okay about the stuff that you're saying right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, right. When people walk up to you, they're just like, you're not like those other ones, right?
Like, it's like, what the? What do you mean?
I know.
It's like, you're just like, we have a wide variety. Like I said in the beginning, like, I like going to Comic Cons. Go to a Comic Con. You will see tons of black people.
See, I've never been, but I've always wanted to.
Yo, it's like, it's heaven for me, bro, because it's like, you grow up, and it's like, everybody's like, now you have to be this way, because you're this, and it's like, and I go to Comic-Con, bro, I'm just cosplaying black people, you got freaking weebs, like, literally, like, it...
Oh, that's the fun thing about, like, Comic-Con and stuff like that, is if only you could take things that are serious and make so many people give up and just, like, embrace the togetherness of something.
And that's really, like, my whole outlook on everything that I'm trying to do. Like, I'm really just trying to, like, I'm goofy on purpose all of the time in my streams. Like, I don't want people to think, like, I'm not a super serious person. I like to have a good time. I like to go out. Like, I, you know, I like to joke about stuff. I like video games. I like, I'm a regular person. I just so happen to understand serious things as well.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, I can have an opinion on so much stuff, but I don't want to perpetuate this, like, stale, like, oh, I have to be serious all the time because I'm talking about serious subject matter. It's like, no, if I can't laugh in a situation where I, like when I almost got ran over by a truck when everything happened, like, after it happened, I was laughing about it because the dude is clearly crazy and also, like, yo, someone tried to kill me? Like, what, dude? So it's like, and if, or I, like, what else am I going to do? Am I going to be like, oh my God, someone tried to kill me. I need to call the police. I need to figure this. Like, no. Let's, like, all right, well, that happened. Let's keep going. Like, I'm not going to let this break me. Like, we're going to continue to have a good time in the darkness. Like, stuff like this is going to happen, but that's what I want. I want us to be able to laugh through all of the pain so we can actually, you know, feel what's going on and, you know, kind of look back at our emotions, you know, the shifts and the changes that we've gone through.
Yeah. And I honestly, I've reached kind of the same point because I often think about life as kind of a joke. Not like nothing serious or anything, but it's just like life is funny in the strangest ways. Like I said, that whole thing about a guy who backs the blue punching a cop in the face, like that is objectively one of the funniest things that I've seen lately.
And it's like, you know, it's not the violence that's funny, it's the situation.
Exactly. Like, sometimes things are just so, sometimes it's irony, sometimes it's just so funny how things come together that you can't help but laugh.
Right.
And like you, like, I've had moments where I've had, like, really weird things happen because of my work or anything like that. And a lot of the time when something strange happens or somebody yells at me or anything like that, I'll be driving in my car and I'll light a cigarette and then I'll just laugh like a maniac while I'm driving for a little while as I'm thinking about it. Because if I didn't, if I actually took everything people say and do as seriously as they want me to, I would have gone insane like 5 years ago.
Right.
Like, it,
I feel it.
You have to be, yes, there are serious things, but if you don't find a way to enjoy the good, bad, and the indifferent parts of life, you're just going to be miserable.
Yeah. Yep, and it's not worth it, man. It's definitely not worth it at all.
No.
There's so much stuff that we can move on and do. It's like, just laugh. Just keep it moving, man.
Yeah, exactly. Man, be less serious, be more kind, be more aware of what's going on around you.
Yeah. And be yourself.
Oh, definitely.
Be yourself.
Yes. Yes. If, I mean, the funny thing is, look at both of us. By being ourselves, we actually became... I can only speak for myself. So by being myself, you know, I'm actually doing the thing I wanted to do.
Right. No, I feel that. And, like, I mean, it's same with me, too, you know? Like, yeah. I've always wanted to be, like, in the realm to be able to, like, I just like talking to people, honestly. So, like, I was like, all right, well, now we can, like, successfully go through with a podcast and, like, realistically, you know, reach out to people and get like more interesting people on and stuff like that because the platform is more legitimate, you know? So it's like I can have fun and reach out to different, you know, different people and stuff, and people are receptive to it. So it makes it, it's like it's fun, and I'm doing the work that like I wanted to do, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It's like this is what I wanted to do, and it just like it all just worked out by being myself. And by being myself, it allowed me to have the platform that I wanted where I can be serious or I could be, you know, not necessarily goofy or silly, more lighthearted or have different types of people because my range as an individual is vast. It's like, oh, that guy's, he just filmed riots and protests, so he's only going to talk to news anchors. And, you know, it's like, no, man.
I know. That's why, like, I almost intentionally mix in, like, other stuff I do, like, the music and stuff like that on, like, my personal pages and everything, because For one, I just don't take it when people try to label me as one thing anymore. If somebody... When I was Kenosha News, I had a policy of... I didn't respond to comments on articles. Because, for one, I'm not going to speak on behalf of the company, and I don't really care that much about, you know, going back and forth with people who just want to argue. As the Uptown Observer, though, if somebody... My thing now is I don't believe in the customer is always right. I believe in the rule of however you approach me, I will treat you in kind. If you approach me discourteously, you're going to get a discourteous response. I owe you no obligation to be courteous to you.
Right.
So it's that's part of the freedom too, which is pretty nice. But
yeah, you get to control your own destiny and mold it how you want. It's not a corporate model where it's like you have to put on a fake smiling face or deal with people that are going to deal with you crazy, because it's like, yo, all right, well, yeah, I'm just going to match your energy, bro, because I signed my own check.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody's going to fire me for, like, turning around and being like, okay, well, no. Like, just, like, say anything. Like, I only answer, well, I answer my subscribers, but I also, you know, answer myself greatly in what my approach will be. And it's funny to me because I remember, I feel like people around this age group or the millennial generation, I think when we were younger, because we kind of like grew up in a weird time.
Yeah, we got the best of both.
We did.
Yeah, we had our chosen both sides of it all.
Yeah, and but I think a lot of the time it was we got a lot of old mentality of kind of how people fit you into a box, or you know how you customize yourself to fit into the job field or anything like that. And now we're finding out again, just because I think people sometimes by necessity had to strike out on their own now, is that totally feasible to be yourself and make other people fit to you.
Yeah.
And so make that a profession.
It's kind of the model.
Yeah.
It's kind of the way to be happy nowadays, you know?
Yeah. Which is very positive. I'm actually very encouraged by that. And I'm glad that it's becoming more of a legitimate way to live.
I mean, the way everything is kind of designed, we don't have a choice, you know? It's like, you're either going to beg and plead for everything that you have, and it still won't be enough, or you can just be like, you know what, I'll just try it on my own.
Yeah, right.
It's like so many people have been, especially with, you know, the pandemic and everything that's happened, they were forced to do that, but I mean, you know, like us, that was kind of our trajectory before the pandemic. Like we both, had that fear. It's like we had the time. Like we were sold something. Like okay, this is what we were sold. Not for corporations before I started working for one, but circumstantially and societally, I'm like, all right, well, you know, I'm a father now. Like benefits. 401k.
That's always,
you know, and it's like, all right, well, this is the system that's designed. This is the stuff that they say we need to sign on to live the lifestyle that we want to live. You know, it's like, and I wasn't doing horribly before, but it was like, well, we'll try it. Let's give it a shot. Maybe I was wrong this whole time. And then it's like, nope, nah, you were right, bro. You shouldn't have did it. It's like, oh, man. Wish I could get that time back, but you know, things happen, you live and you learn, and then, you know, it's kind of how life goes, man. The universe kind of just sends you in that direction that you need to be in, you know?
And that's, it's funny that you say that, because it's like, I've had a lot of moments lately, so, you know, I've been through a lot in the past 8 years, personally and professionally, and for a long time, I didn't, everybody wants to feel like there was a point to all the bad things that happened. Everybody wants to think that it was useful somehow to their story. And the funny thing is, lately, especially since everything went down, I've seen the usefulness of a lot of the bad times I had. Because those bad times, I picked up skills and things to where I could do what I'm doing now.
Right.
And I'll also a lot of it led to me to be able to separate from a Kadosha News or from the industry I had known. So, you know, it's... Honestly, I encourage anybody who's feeling like they're not heard or feeling like they want to do something different or that, you know, they've just lost all passion for their career and there's something they've always wanted to do that's actually feasible, do it.